Good afternoon. Good afternoon. If I could ask you all to please take your seats. Thank you. And if I could also ask you all, if you have a telephone, if you could put it on vibrate, like the soft vibrate, that would be great. If you have a radio, fax, or telephone in your pocket, if you could put those also on vibrate, that would be great. Thank you.
See, I told you.
You're tough.
Okay, understanding successful Jewish engagement isn't easy. How do we know that something has changed in how someone identifies themselves as Jewish? What if that change happens long after the program takes place? Is it about attitudes, behaviors, social networks, all of the above? Good afternoon. I'm Amy Dean, and I have the pleasure of serving as the campaign chair of the Greater Miami Jewish Federation. And it's my pleasure to introduce this session. Right, I brought my posse. I just should let you know. This afternoon, we have an opportunity to dive deep into a case study focusing on the work of Hillel International. As part of its broader initiative to drive excellence in engaging Jewish students on campus, Hillel has begun an organization-wide initiative to study, evaluate, and learn from their work, creating a paradigm for evaluating meaningful Jewish experiences and connecting data to action and change. Looking at Hillel's experience, you will have the opportunity to explore how to build data-informed strategies that are relevant not only to education and engagement, but to any organization. By way of context, federations collectively are the largest funder of the Hillel system, and Hillels are collectively the largest network of organizations, providing Jewish engagement services to the university population. So in addition to the valuable opportunity to learn from their work on measuring impact, we are also focusing today on a critically important initiative relative to most of our federations, given their focus on supporting and engaging college students. JFNA is delighted that with the support of our new Jewish Education and Engagement Office, this and several other sessions are part of an expanded focus on these issues at this year's GA. Our speakers today are Brian Hayden, a partner at Collaborative Strategies in St. Louis, where he leads strategic planning efforts with private businesses and nonprofits across North America. In addition to his work with Hillel, Brian has assisted federations, JCCs, day schools, and synagogues with various benchmarking projects. Jen Zwilling is Vice President for Strategy and Measurement at Hillel International, where she is responsible for overseeing the progress of Hillel in its drive to excellence, which seeks to rapidly improve the performance of local Hillels. I'm also told to please remind you about the GA app game, and you have to be at tomorrow's plenary in order to have a chance to win. But at this point, I'll turn things over to Mark Gervis, JFNA's Executive Vice President, to moderate this discussion. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Amy. And welcome, everybody. Good afternoon. How's your GA going? All right. Mid-afternoon slump, or maybe we didn't give you enough in the plenary room. I'm not sure which. So what I want to start with, actually, is just noting that my first job as a Jewish communal professional was actually working for Hillel, at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. When I was a professional in Hillel, I would say I had very little sense as an employee, as someone who is engaging students every day, of how to sort of think strategically about the kinds of things that we're going to be dealing with in this session. I'm particularly excited that we have the opportunity to sort of expose what Hillel has taken on from sort of a very scientific measurement and planning sense, but also to be able to translate it into kind of impact it actually has on students on campuses. And I can see in the room we have, I suspect, a few students and a few Hillel professionals, which is great, and folks from who are involved in leadership in local communities, which is the perfect mix of people that we would want for this session. So we're going to get started with turning to Jen and just asking, why did Hillel International start down this path? Why did it want to look at measurement?
Sure. So Mark, first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity to share the work. And I feel like this is a room of friends and family, so looking forward to a great conversation. The measurement work that we're doing really has its genesis in Hillel's Drive to Excellence, which set a goal of having by 2020 50 excellent Hillels and 85% of the rest improving. Articulating excellence is really the first step in our ability to do that work. If we're going to have 50 excellent Hillels, we have to know what excellence looks like. Generally, there's a lot of pride at Hillel and pride in our work that there's a lot of good things happening, but measurement is critical to that. In the past and over years and even currently, you can look at the study that was recently released by the Cohen Center, we know that there's a lot of good work happening on college campuses. The value of Hillel in some ways is not questioned in that standpoint. And we have a lot of good program evaluation happening and has happened at Hillel over the years. I think the question really is, how does each Hillel have for themselves the data to understand how they're doing? And frankly, too much has been anecdotal over time. And sometimes people talk about, quote, good Hillels and not so good Hillels. It's just unhelpful language. It's unhelpful to all of us. And our goal is to make sure that every Hillel is great, that every Hillel has the ability to engage the maximum number of students on campus. And having data about measurement of how we're doing enables us really to make sure that all Hillels have the right types of resources to do the best they can do by students. And so that we also, when we see a Hillel that's, quote, good or really great, we know what practices they are doing that enable them to be great, to spread them, and for the ones who are struggling, to be able to take those practices and apply the right supports and resources to make sure that the students on those campuses have the best of what Hillel has to offer. So that's really our genesis.
So just to put this in context, 50 Hillels receive top marks in categories of excellence. That's out of how many?
There's about 150 Hillel foundations across the United States that are professionally staffed, and there's hundreds of other student clubs that are not staffed. In this situation, we're looking specifically at our professionally staffed Hillels.
So the first approach is let's get a third of them to
the top of the tops,
pile, right? Okay. So how did you figure out what matters? Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you arrive at a definition of excellence?
So this is still, I'll just be honest, and for everyone in the room, and I will actually credit many of my Hillel colleagues who are sitting in there, and this is very much a work in progress and a team effort. We started by convening a cross-section of our stakeholders to really engage in a conversation about, when we talk about excellence at Hillel, what do we really mean by that? And we began to articulate a set of outcomes. Who would students be because of what we did? You know, how many students would be reaching, and what are the organizational supports that are needed?
So just one definitional thing?
Yes.
What do you mean by stakeholders?
We engaged our professional staff, some funders, board members, and we talked a lot to the professional staff who were speaking with their students on campus about what excellence looks like.
Okay, good. So what did you decide to measure?
So we talked first about two areas in students, and this is kind of a summary. My colleagues in the back have copies of Hillel's Drive to Excellence for people who might be interested in some of the details. You can take one on your way out today. But first we said, well, if Hillel is successful at the work we do, who will students be when they graduate from college, when they leave college? And so these, again, are kind of categories of areas. We talked about students having a Jewish social network, right? We know that more Jewish friendships promote more Jewish connectivity and Jewish involvement, that they see the centrality of the J, as we called it, in their lives, which is really about seeing Jewish values as speaking to them, perhaps being attuned to the calendar as part of their lives and kind of the rhythm of the year, and being connected to Judaism and certain choices they make in their lives. Building a relationship with Israel as the Jewish homeland, seeing themselves as a part of the global Jewish people, and increasing generally Jewish cultural knowledge and literacy. That those were some of the things we might expect students to exhibit if they had been involved in Hillel during the college years.
Okay. So, but excellence wasn't only sort of a measure of like what the outcomes for students would be, right? There's also a organizational side to it?
There is. I want to just talk about the outputs, if I could, before we go there. I'm going to turn it to Brian for the other side of that. But so then we said, well, if we did all of those things, can we do that for everybody? What does that look like? How many students should we be reaching, and what should that look like? And we have been doing some research in prior studies, and we knew that frequency led to greater outcomes, right? The more someone was involved in Jewish life, the stronger their connections to Jewish life would be. And we also had a strong sense that there were certain things that we offered at Hillel that were perhaps more impactful than other things. And so we tried to create, and we had a significant goal of reaching the majority of Jewish students on campus. So we didn't just want to be a club serving a small group of students, but as the largest and kind of predominant Jewish student organization on campus, that we had a goal of really connecting with the majority of students on campus. So we created, in effect, a sort of funnel, that if we were to do our best work, which we defined as high impact experiences with 20% of our students, right? We would have to know, I'm gonna work from the end. Right, if we thought that there was this category of high impact, experiences that were immersive or sustained, rich in Jewish content, and were reflective, community building, or asked of students to give of themselves to others in some way. That was a high impact.
Can I give us some examples of
what high impact? Birthright Israel, a Hillel leadership role, a fellowship experience, an immersive Shabbaton of some kind, learning. Those are high impact experiences. In order to do that, right, we needed, first of all, to know who students were, that in order to initiate a relationship, you need to know who students on campus are, right? And then we believed that even one interaction mattered. And we set a goal of having one interaction a year with 70% of students on campus. Well, you know, we can talk further about that. In some ways, it's an audacious goal. You know, a lot of Jewish communal organizations reach about, you know, collectively, we talk about reaching about 40% or so of the Jewish community. So it's audacious and ambitious, perhaps, but something we hope we can realize. And then we said, knowing the more, right, the more you do, the more you grow, that we ought to be testing frequency. And we said, let's set a target of having four interactions with 40% of students, and then 20%, the high impact. So that's kind of where we stuck our stake in the ground, is in the kind of our initial excellence dialogue. Okay. So.
And Brian, you're going to deal with the organizational side?
Yeah, so when you think about excellence in a Hillel context, I think some of the programmatic aspects of that that Jen was just describing, you know, they make a lot of sense. But we also had a hypothesis that it would be difficult for an organization to achieve those programmatic levels of excellence without the right sort of organizational foundation. And so we looked at two aspects of organizational capacity in our measurement. So the first part had to do with the financial strength of the organization. Okay, so I think it probably stands to reason that an organization that is able to either break even or generate a small surplus every year, the odds are that organization is better able to invest in some of the programs that would drive the outcomes that Jen described versus an organization that is running deficits. So of course, in our financial assessment, we look for we look at the Hillel's annual financial results. We also take a look at its revenue composition. So our hypothesis again was that the broader the base, if you will, we expect the more stable the revenue will be over time. So we look at how the revenue composition of the Hillel breaks out between, or the breadth of its support, I guess I should say, in the community, as well as the other revenue sources that it brings to the table. And finally, we also looked at the Hillel's balance sheet. So we all know that nothing ever happens exactly as you expect, and so the ability of any nonprofit to weather bumps in the road or unforeseen circumstances, we hypothesize, would be very important. So we look at the degree to which Hillel has some funds set aside in savings, if you will, or reserves to backfill any shortcomings that it may have at any given year. So that was kind of the financial side of our analysis. But we also recognize that, or I should say, again, we had a hypothesis that the quality of the Hillel's program would probably vary based on the passion and the quality of the team, the staff team that the Hillel has interacting with students every day. So our first take at assessing that was through a staff survey, and we were really excited to get fantastic participation in the first year. But what we're looking at there is really engagement. We're looking at morale and those factors that we think might contribute to that. So again, in short, we thought those were the kind of organizational factors that would really contribute to Hillel's ability to be excellent.
All right, so we spanned everything from do Jewish students know that there's a holiday coming and are they doing something about it, to is Hillel running a surplus and how engaged their staff are.
Yes.
Okay, so it's like it's a broad spectrum.
Absolutely.
And you could also say that we also articulated other factors, really, you know, the strength of a board, the relationship to the university, lots of other things. There was a question of how much could we measure and do well as we began to do this work.
Okay.
So we.
Definitely.
Right. So this is, having worked in nonprofit settings for 30 years, this is very ambitious. So how did you get started?
Great. Well, so the first thing to say is those are measures that I articulated before are. Were kind of our hypotheses of what excellence ought to look like. And so we had to really test that. And we needed a group of pioneers to help us to do that. And so we set out to create a pilot. And we had four things really we were looking to do with the pilot. One was to say, first of all, the definitions of excellence that we've articulated, are they right? Do they matter? Right? If not, then we shouldn't be measuring them, and better not to dive in. Right? We could say, okay, this is excellence, let's all go measure it. But if we did that and they were wrong, we wouldn't have a lot of buy-in or support from everyone to be doing it. It's not meaningful. Second was, can we measure these things? How do we collect the data we're seeking? Do Hillels have the ability to gather it? What are they gathering now? What practices might they need to improve? How do we get data from students? All of those pieces are part of the question. Third, and probably most important of all of this, and I think still very much a work in progress, and you know, I just want to acknowledge there's a lot of Hillel professionals in the room right now who are partners in this endeavor, and we're all very much in this work, and I hope as we have a conversation later you'll join the conversation, but how do we help Hillels make meaning of the data and use it, right? If the whole purpose of having data is not just to get a grade, but to actually continually think about how you're doing and where you want to get better. How we help Hillels do that is really vitally important. And finally, how do we create a scalable infrastructure so that data becomes part of our organization's life cycle? It is, I have to say, I've worked in the Jewish community almost my entire career, and I think we all get into this business because we love the people we work with. I got into this work because I love students and I loved working with them. And that's a little bit, right, data, numbers, isn't necessarily what brought me here. So that's not intuitive to all of us. So how we do this, how do we build a structure for measurement for the organization is really exciting and new territory, I think. So just a couple other things about how we got into this. First of all, we engaged experts. Brian is one of them that we turned to, and also Wendy Rossov and Rossov Consulting are critical partners in our work. Wendy actually sat with us as we were articulating our outcomes at the beginning and began to help us think about the right ways to talk about student outcomes. And Brian has been helping us measure the quantitative student side, the finances, and the employee engagement. And Wendy helped us to design a student survey that helped us understand how we were doing on outcomes. So they have been critical. And most critical has been the partnership with Hillel professionals and Hillels across North America. And this year, actually, two from the FSU that are joining. So we started by asking some of the Hillels who had been part of the process of helping us articulate what excellence was to join us. And then we looked to see who was missing, right? Did we have enough public schools, enough private schools, enough small and large commuter, multi-campus, et cetera? And so we had 18 campuses join us in the first round who kind of represented the diversity of types of Hillels to really get going in this. So that's how we got going.
So one of the toughest things about this kind of measurement process is getting people to step in and to sort of manage their expectations about mm-hmm. what it's about, right? Their fear of measurement, their fear of being sort of compared against others. How is this data going to be used? So
yeah.
How did you deal with that side of it?
So I'm going to let Brian talk a little bit in just a moment. I just want to say I think the values that have been really important to our work have been a commitment to collaboration and to transparency in this process throughout the Hillel Network. This has been a collaborative process, and we have tried to be as open as we can about what we're learning and what we're doing and trying to foster that level of transparency with one another throughout. So that's my North Star, I guess.
Yeah, and Mark, I would say you're so right about the importance of managing expectations. At CSI, my firm, not the dead body CSI, collaborative strategy. Always have to sort of throw that out there. At our firm, we've been a part of a number of these measurement initiatives, and to be honest, some stick and some don't. And one of the key differences, I think, in the programs that stick is they do a really good job of managing expectations. So I was really excited when we joined the effort last year that we were proactive about this early. So I think there were a couple of ingredients that enabled us to do what we did that first year. The first was we actually wrote down a project charter for participants. And we went old school. We made people actually sign it. And we wanted the signed copy. We wanted the signed copy both from the executive director as well as from the board chair. And some of the tenets from that charter are on the slide here, and I'll just touch on a few of them, because again, I think this was super important in terms of laying the groundwork for a program that's gonna survive the test of time. So first and foremost, I view those 18 seats that we had in the program in its first year as a really precious commodity. So we wanted to make sure that everybody who participated was committed to being active. So not only did that mean that we needed their help in putting together the tools and the mechanics of the program, if you will, but we also wanted to make sure that they were committed to doing something with the data on the back end. Like the last thing that I would aspire to for the program is that, you know, when we're done, we get the results and people are like, oh wow, that is super interesting. And then it goes into the bin, right? Or it goes on the shelf. That is not gonna influence Hillel's on their path to excellence. We've gotta be able to drive decisions. So we were really asking for our Hillel participants to be partners with us and actively engaging in using what we learn in this program to make smarter and better decisions. So that was that was one really big important piece. Another part of the charter says that we can't take these findings and keep them to ourselves. It's very important that once the findings come out, that we want our colleagues, our executive directors who are participating, to share the results up to their boards and down to their teams, whether they're a team of two or they're a team of 20. Again, if we're trying to move the needle on the way that the organization works, certainly my hypothesis would be that one person can't do that by themselves. So sharing of the information was really important. Another important ground rule, if you will, that perhaps is controversial is we were completely transparent, okay? So we said that we were gonna report everyone's results so everyone could see them, okay? So 50% of the time you were really stoked because you looked awesome, okay? 50% of the time, not so awesome. But if we're here to learn, this ground rule is in place because if somebody's doing a really great job at something, we want the Hillels to be able to turn to their colleagues, you know, shoot them an email or pick up the phone and call them and learn from what they're doing. And we can't do that if the results are masked.
I just want to add, it was transparent within the group of campuses project. Right. We weren't sending their data, and we're not going to tell you today what anyone's scores are.
Yes.
It's within that group of that kind of sacred circle of people involved in measuring, people sticking their necks
good
out
point.
To do this.
Very
so
good
I just want to.
Yeah, right. No, it's not on the Hillel website. Don't worry. yet. No, it's good. The other part of confidentiality that, at least from my perspective, is really important is that I think it ups the stakes almost psychologically. It ups the stakes. That we all put in the program. And hopefully in those long hours that it takes in filling out the questionnaires at the beginning of the process, people are more, our teams are more thoughtful about making sure that that we enter data correctly so that it's most useful for us at the end. And I guess the last thing I would say, or the last thing I would highlight about the charter is the fact that we're really hopeful that this is not a one-shot deal. And that Hillels stay in the program year in and year out. Again, we have an audacious goal, as you described it, Mark, and I don't expect that anybody's gonna get there in a year's worth of time, so this is gonna be a journey. And so hopefully, you know, each year our participants are making incremental progress, but we won't know, right, unless they come back and participate year in and year out. And so that's what we asked of the Hillels, but this was not a one-way street, as I think you've probably heard Jen articulate. Hillel International has put some significant resources in place to help the participating Hillels make the most of the experience in the program. So there's a team of subject matter experts that helps the Hillels complete all of the questionnaires and strategize with them in terms of, you know, how do we get the best response rates from our surveys? How are we going to distribute this in a way really to maximize our yield? And just as important, when the results come back, you know, how do we make sense of what we've learned? How can I start to put this in play? You'll hear us talk a little bit more this afternoon
right.
about how important that part is. So those were all some of the key themes that were in the charter. And maybe just one more thing that I would say with regards to managing expectations, and this is sort of dry, I think, for most folks, but super important, is we all had to align around a common set of definitions. Okay, so what I call contributed income isn't going to be the same as what you call contributed income, or what you count as salaries won't be the same as what you count as salaries. And so it was super important that we all have a common language around that. And usually the first time I say that with my clients, they're like, yep, that means these guys got to use my definition. But it doesn't work that way, right? So everybody has to redo their numbers in a way that creates apples to apples comparisons. And we asked for the Hillels' input in making that happen. So they helped us design the tools. They helped us set the parameters. And so I think their participation in the development of those tools was also really important in terms of getting that buy-in.
Okay. Just before I move to the next question, for those of you who are standing in the back, there are probably enough seats all the way up in the front here. So I invite you to come in and sit down and make yourselves more comfortable. So what did you learn about the process along the way, right? So this was a hypothesis,
right.
A test.
Right.
What'd you learn?
So look, we're still very much in process,
right.
But I would say it's the process itself has been vital to any success we've had to date. In addition to kind of the level of communication and collaboration within the pilot, we've also been very public externally within the Hillel movement about this project going on. We've been briefing all the other affiliates about what we've learned throughout and kind of giving updates. And we ran workshops at our global assembly. And I guess one piece of evidence about our success was we went from 18 to 48 Hillels from year one to year two who all raised their hands to be part of it, and we turned away a few who hadn't yet been collecting data to fully be in it with us. So that, you know, I think some of the process has been important. You know, Brian spoke a minute ago about everyone making their data available to one another. That was through a process of conversation, right, among the group. It was the I'll show you mine if you show me yours. Can we trust each other, right? And then, I mean, even just to up the ante, and some of you are in the room and were part of these conversations, when it came time for them to submit their first round of student engagement data, most Hillels weren't keeping data as well as we ultimately wanted to get to. And there was some pressure to say, well, I know my numbers are really better, but we had a rule that you only report what you're actually tracking. And so they didn't look as good. And they actually got on the phone with one another. And without us knowing, like, they didn't involve anyone at Hillel International, and they made a pact among one another that they'll all report their actual data as bad or as good as it might be. They're all going to be truthful at the same level, so we would have apples to apples data, right? That again, the part of the process to me that story exemplifies some of what that is about, and you know, I think we have to keep that spirit as we go. The process is, I think, gets people on board and helps us to be learning with one another and kind of reinforces
right.
that.
So shifting from the process to actually
to what we learned.
The data. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what did we learn about collecting data? So many things. One thing, and you just spoke to this a minute ago, and my colleagues Karen and Batch are here in the room. We have a team here who are really helping campuses do this work, that collecting data means that local Hillels need more support to be able to do that well, and that we need to be able to provide those supports for that to happen. And so everything from the process of submitting from the collection tools to helping interpret the results, you know, we have really put a team on the ground to do that. And it's not an automatic process, so.
No, and I would actually share from the Federation's own systems experience with benchmarking, because we went through this some time ago, mm-hmm. but one of the really critical issues and challenges in the process was how the local federations were able to translate the use of the data into their own processes and how much support was there really available in the system to do that.
Right. There, I mean, just today I saw an email from one of the pilot campuses who this year knew we started collecting fundraising data from the Hillels to help them get a better sense of how what each other's best practices in fundraising are, and that will help us support Hillels in fundraising. And someone wrote and said, we're thinking about changing our fundraising management tool, and they said, we see you're making it easier for people, you've given instructions for this tool, can we talk to you as we think about our translation? So you know, we're both on the student data side and on the financial side beginning to get into these conversations with our Hillels. So yeah, and then I think the other thing about the data is it's got to be actionable. I mean, that you started to speak about that.
Sure. So one of the things I was nervous about getting into the program was that we ask all these questions and then we would like literally dump the equivalent of a phone book on the participants at the end and be like, good luck. We knew that would not work. So I think we've been very conscious about distilling those factors that we think matter most, mm-hmm. and focusing folks on those things in our report. So important, I would say, is focus that actually one of the main tools that we use to communicate results is a dashboard, an online dashboard that encourages interactivity with the results. So we have sort of in each of the areas that are a part of the analytics program, we have hypotheses on what some of the key outcome measures are, right? Like, so Jen went through the stages of student engagement. So of course, that's very important to us. I mentioned a couple of financial measures that are really important. So we highlight those in the dashboard, and we give participants the ability to look at how they have done, obviously, against everybody else, but also against a peer group. And we can suggest a peer group, or the participants can select their own peers. However they'd like to compare themselves, they can learn from those differences. So that's just sort of one mechanism that we've used to drive home the importance of focusing on just a few areas.
Right. So you have some examples.
One of the things that we did as we started to get back the first year of data was we held a meaning-making meeting with the 18 Hillels. We had a whole lot of data, and we had to try to make sense of it and try to distill what was going to be most important. And so I want to show just one example of kind of what that looks like. And this was a conversation we had with the Hillels. Brian showed us a slide that looked like something like this. Which
I was so excited when I saw this slide because it just intuitively jumped out at me what this could possibly be.
so I'm going
to
explain it.
It's not
intuitive. It's complicated.
Not to me.
Right. That's why we have Brian. Right. So basically, if you go back to the output measures that Hillel said, we had a target of meeting 70% of students and doing our what we called at the time our best work, the high impact work, with 20% of the students. And so Brian took, as he was crunching the data, said, well, what if we, if he was looking at it like a marketing person, if you opened a relationship with how many people, and what was the ratio of how many people did you do your best work with, or if you were a salesperson, did you close the sale with? So he basically mapped what we call gateway, that 70%, meeting somebody once over their 20%. So the x-axis here is breadth, as we call it in Hillel. How many students did you meet, right? The target in our initial definition is 70%. And of those 70%, how many did you close with? How many did you do your best work with? And so when we plotted it, first of all, we see that a lot of Hillels are doing, are either broad or deep, and fewer both. But Brian asked us a really simple question. He said, and when they saw this, they had like a little initial so they knew which was their Hillel on the map and they could see themselves relative to peers. And he said, to what extent does where you sit on this map reflect your strategy as a Hillel? right? So this becomes the point at which you begin to say, well, that's a data point, but actually, what does it mean about the work I'm doing? Does it mean anything? And so for some people, that was a really provocative question they hadn't thought of. And I remember one colleague's response distinctly. She works at a large Hillel. There are thousands of Jewish students, she works at a small Hillel on a campus where there are thousands of Jewish students. And she is a relatively new director, and she said, I don't have enough resources to reach all of the students on campus. So I've made a conscious choice that I'm going to do my very best work with every student I meet, right? And then we all have to ask ourselves, if we're going to help this colleague succeed, what does her Hillel need, right? In some cases, Hillels need financial resources to grow their professional staff and to have the resources to engage their students. In some cases, they need new methodologies or new approaches or more high-impact offerings, right? It began to beg a conversation about what were the best practices, the resources, the skills, the talents that might be needed to get to excellence.
So just to make sure I'm understanding this, and maybe this will help some of you. So that top right, that top left quadrant, where you've got the largest cluster of respondents, represents campuses that are reaching fewer than 50% of their students, the four times a year or more that that was your measurement indices.
No, the one time a year, fewer.
One time. One time a year.
Yes.
But have relatively high impact
Correct.
On the students that they're reaching.
Correct. And on the bottom right are the people who perhaps were reading lots and lots of students but weren't taking it as deep as they could go, right? So it also begged a question, as we're in the learning process, and I'm going to share some of our early findings in a moment, I hope. But you know, we started to ask ourselves the question, well, what is excellence? And for a long time, Hillel has talked about the question of breadth. We talk about breadth and depth at Hillel. How many students do we know, and how good is the work we're doing with them? How deep are we going in helping grow Jewish journeys? And so we started to say, well, if in 5 years, if we're excellent, perhaps we sit somewhere at the nexus of breadth and depth, right? Do we know, it's like I lost, no. Do we know, is every campus gonna hit a 70% target? Maybe, and maybe that will be our ultimate definition of excellence. We're, you know, again, this is, we're in a work in progress, we're sharing a work in progress with you, or we're gonna come out with some range. But we started to ask ourselves the question, if some are good at breadth now and depth, you know, in depth now, in 5 years, will 50 excellent Hillels, will they be sitting somewhere up here in this right quadrant, right? Where they're doing more deep work for more students. And so I don't know, I can't tell you if in 5 years it's going to be exactly 70, 40, 20, or if it's going to be some algorithm of where they sit in that breadth, depth continuum that may be in our conversation. So I'm just giving you a hint, kind of a little peek into our process here. But I share this just also for the point of, when you start to look at the data and you ask the questions about your strategy, it invites a whole conversation in an organization that may not have been part of most Hillel's everyday conversation. For some it certainly is, but not for others.
Okay, so. Great. So you started with some hypotheses, and now you're a year and a bit into actually collecting data.
Yep.
So you're gonna give us a sneak preview of like what you're starting to learn?
What we're starting to learn. So I'll start with, we have just a couple of quick slides on this here. We did a student survey on all of the campuses in the first year of the pilot. We have just 1 year of data, and we're waiting for 2 years of data to really make any final conclusions about this work. But you know, the first thing we should all know, and I guess was reinforced for us again, although it's been validated in other studies, Hillel actually matters. One touch does make a difference. The students who had just one interaction with Hillel that year had higher outcomes than their peers who did not have an interaction with Hillel.
Right.
So just on the base level, the 70%
matters.
Yeah, we
don't know that there's any causality to that, right?
No.
It could be self-selecting.
Correct.
People would, right.
Well, so look, the study did two things. It looked at outcomes by itself, and then it backed out. We took the outcomes we spoke about before, and we created a survey that tested, had a battery of questions around each of them and kind of were able to group them, a battery of questions that addressed a certain outcome area. And then Rossoff Consulting did something called regression analysis, that pulled back students' backgrounds, students' prior life experiences, and they were able to calculate kind of Hillel effect. And so, right, so we
all
could
things
see,
being equal,
yes, there was a Hillel.
Students who come from similar family backgrounds, similar levels of Jewish education, one who had been to Hillel even once would have higher
it
outcomes.
It matters, yes. Okay. So, and then what we learned, so we had set our hypothesis at 4 or more interactions, and certainly Jewish outcomes scores grew with interaction, but it kind of leveled off, or not, like, became a highest effect around 6 interactions. So 6 or more interactions was quite high, and actually became somewhat similar to our high impact outcomes. They started to look alike. So we have this sort of, I don't know what to call it. Can't help students who had
returns.
Yeah, well, no, I don't want to say that because these are all strong. Right. But so it's not really diminishing returns, okay. Maximizing returns, I would actually say it the other way. The student who had 6 or more interactions and a high impact experience was like the best of the best, right? 6 and no high impact was the second. Fewer than 6 experiences and a high impact, or fewer than 6 experiences at and no high impact. Like, you could see kind of the relative hierarchy. The gradation is not like vast. So I think one of the things we're looking at is what's the second year of data that's going to help us understand this hierarchy and understand what's going to matter most as we think about kind of the ultimate numbers of the 70-40-20 continuum. But just to give an example, I think for me this underscores things like birthright with follow through is really important, right? 6+ interactions and a high impact experience, right, is kind of the sweet spot of the Jewish world, and it was really underscored here. But it means that for students who, may not be taking on leadership roles, but are coming regularly for Shabbat or are involved in a social justice program or baking challah on camp, challah for hunger, those things really do matter for students' Jewish growth.
Right. So. And Brian, earlier you talked about sort of the measurement of sort of staff-related issues. So you also have outcomes that you're starting to learn about that.
We do. On the staff survey side, we our outcome measure is a net promoter question, or net promoter score. And some of you may know of the net promoter methodology, maybe not by that name, but when I tell you the question, you'll be like, oh yeah, I know that one. So it's the question of how likely would you be to recommend fill in the blank, and you answer that question on a 0 to 10 score. There's actually a great deal of market research underpinning that as a very effective gauge for loyalty to a brand or to a product on the sort of for-profit consumer side. And then there's also, in the last, I would say, 5 to 7 years, been a big application of that in a staff setting. We've done that. We've used that as an indicator in many, many staff surveys. So that was sort of what we were testing for, is a very high staff net promoter score. And we found a couple of factors, actually 3 factors, that tended to correlate in a very high way with those scores. And you can see those on the thought bubbles on the slide. So one of the areas had to do with the degree to which a staff person really felt like their work connects with and is important to the mission, okay? And the second one, I think, is somewhat related to that. At work, their opinion counts. So, you know, my hypothesis on why those factors correlated really highly is that the teams at our Hillels want to feel like they're having an impact. They're part of a small sort of entrepreneurial nonprofit. They all could have chosen probably many paths in their career, but they chose to be at Hillel in this sort of small setting. So. I think what the data is telling us, or like I say, my hypothesis is that the data is telling us that that connection to impact is really important. The third factor that you see on the screen has to do with the degree to which staff felt like the workplace was innovative and that the team was really interested in pursuing, you know, the best possible outcomes. So in short, the higher people tended to rate on those 3 factors. The higher the net promoter tended to be. And by the way, we see this.
A lot of this sounds like what you would expect of, you know, if you were trying to measure what makes a great place to work in a sort of generic kind of way, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So what it matters that I'm here,
yeah.
I have a certain amount of autonomy, mm-hmm. you know, and influence on what's happening here. I'm encouraged to take risks and, yeah. you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting, you know, I often hear with our nonprofit clients concerns about things like salaries and benefits and the actual workplace setting. And not to diminish the importance of those, but we consistently find that some of those harder factors, if you will, versus the softer factors that are on the screen, these always tend to be more important.
Right. So one more question for you guys, and then we're actually going to open up for their questions. So what happens after the report, right? If you go through a cycle, a year of measurement, you're now in the second year of measurement.
I mean, one of the things we've spent our time on is helping local HLLs interpret their data and figure out what to do with it. So my colleagues, Bachchan and Karen, are in the room, spent time on the phone with each of the initial 18 campuses to help them interpret the reports, to think about what it meant for things that they were going to, you know, do this year and try and experiment with. And, you know, we begin to... I think some of them just changed their data practices. They were collecting a lot more. We helped HLLs begin to look at their data. I remember being in a conversation with a HLL. I was on campus last winter, and we pulled a report that helped them look at, well, how many students had they met over the past couple of months, and how far away were they from that 40% target? And there was a whole bunch of students they had met once or twice, but they hadn't pursued the relationship. And if we knew now if meeting them more frequently actually matters, then how do we attune our staff team to saying,
six,
I met Mark and I met Brian, and we've only seen them twice, but now, six is, how do we make sure that those relationships that we've started with Mark and Brian, that we follow up on them, that what do we know about them to actually go back? And so we focus on helping HLLs begin to try to hit those targets that were, and so I think those are some of the types of conversations that folks are having. You know, the other thing, some of the HLLs in their data saw, and again, I didn't share this as early, but kind of like their effect size in a certain area might have been higher higher than some of their peers or lower than some of their peers, and that they said, I want to improve on helping students have deeper Jewish social networks this year. What should that look like? Or deepen our connections to Israel. What are we offering in that arena this year? And so those types of conversations were part of the kind of the consultations that we invited there. And you know, that's we have our global assembly coming up in a couple weeks, and there's a number of sessions on that topic explicitly. So that's just one example.
Great. Yeah. So we're going to do two things with the remaining time. We want to provide some time for you to ask questions of Jen and Brian. We also have some questions for you, so we're going to let you get your questions out first. We were originally going to try and do this in a room where we could seat people around round tables and actually get some discussion going about sort of this methodology and how you take it back to your community. Too many people registered for the conference. We didn't have enough rooms left to put us in a room that large. So good problem to have, right? So any questions that people have, there's a mic in the center of the room, and so maybe you could sort of line up there. That way everyone will be able to hear the question. And please introduce yourself and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Trish. I'm from Hillel at Temple University. And my question is, when you guys did the surveying of these students, who actually distributed the survey? Was it done through Hillel, through the university, through a third party?
Through the Hillel, the Hillel and students. I mean, the staff worked with students and kind of sent it out. So we definitely didn't do it through the university.
So then would it be fair to say then there are students though that probably are Jewish and on campus that, you know, don't even identify, especially looking at the Pew report right now, the climate of how students are identifying as being Jewish is changing drastically. Mm-hmm. So then the study would be missing the voices of all of those students who weren't touched by Hillel, even once, and then if you got touched by Hillel once and you're taking the survey, then you would actually feel like you care about it enough to have taken the survey in the first place.
Right.
So then how do you balance
really
for that?
Is, right. You know, you end up with, are we ending up with so bias. Self-selecting us?
Yeah, is this a little bit biased?
Right. One of the things that we struggled with in year one that we're working to improve in year two was the kind of the overall representation of the sample, that I would say there's a disproportionate representation of students who were more involved versus less involved. On the aggregate though, in the full collection, so we didn't collect a Temple, but if we had collected a Temple, individual campuses didn't always have enough of a representative sample for us to know what that looked like at one university. But on the aggregate, our sample size was very large, and we had enough to understand what it looked like. We had enough students who were doing nothing with Hillel and were not involved, who did receive and take the survey, than to others. So one of our goals as we go into year two is increasing the the variety and diversity of the sample size overall, and helping local Hillels do that, because then their data individually become more meaningful over
great,
time.
Great question. Thank you.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Hi, Jessica Melman from Greater Metro West, New Jersey. So I know you guys are very much in the beginning of this, but tell me about your thoughts of how you're going to take this data and disseminate it to the larger communities, namely the Federation, so that we can learn from what you're learning in your Hillels to make the Hillels in our communities stronger. What do you need from the Federation systems in order
terrific.
To be able to move them forward?
Thank
so
you.
Just step one was bringing this here to the GA.
Sure. So first of all, I want to thank Mark, because Mark has, I think, helped us introduce this conversation in the Federation space. We had an opportunity last spring to meet with some Federation planners across the country and begin sharing some of this early work. And I will also want to thank, there's been a number of Federations who have been really supportive of their Hillels being part of this work and have encouraged their participation. So Atlanta, Baltimore, I think in Florida, I'm trying to think of what are the other. There's a bunch of communities that have really kind of encouraged their Hillels to be part of this, embrace this. Right,
process.
And so, you know, I think lots of Federations are looking for ways to measure, and this is, I think, a resource for all of us. We've asked, for now, as I said, like I'm not taking a local Hillels data and giving it to the Federation. I think it's a partnership. You're working closely with your Hillels. They know that you're part of this. You know, the Federations know which of their affiliates are part of this, and we encourage that conversation to be part of this. And we have, you know, we're here to be a resource in that conversation to make sure that Federations are understanding kind of their local Hillels data in the context of the greater, the greater set of data as people are asking. And two, I think once there's an opportunity, if we see there's an opportunity for a Hillel who could grow in a certain area, right? I think to have that conversation of how a local Federation can support a Hillel to become excellence is a terrific opportunity for us to be in partnership and to think about, what perhaps oftentimes it takes financial resources. Who are some potential investors and donors in the community that might come behind helping Hillel improve its work towards excellence?
I think also, sorry, just to follow up on that, to better understand the impact that those students that are getting those excellent, are really impacted by Hillel, and what those students then bring back into their communities after they graduate, and really understand the impact that those students are having that have had positive Hillel experiences will go a very long way in getting the Federation's Are they becoming Federation donors? Are they becoming leaders in their communities? Like, what's happening to those Jewish students once they're back in their communities?
So I think, I think it's a great point. I think it also sort of points to one of the challenges as we think about looking at engagement in Jewish life. So if you look at the trajectory of how Federations have gotten involved in Jewish education identity, Jewish continuity work, right, this goes back to a big push going back to the 1980s. It's been a little bit quiet on our collective system agenda through the recession. We're starting to bring it back. But the bar has moved a little bit, because we're not just talking about education anymore. We're talking about education and engagement. And that's definitely a response to the demographic challenges that we're facing and the kind of population, particularly with a younger generation that is experiencing the world in a different way, right? So I think for Federations, that also puts a challenge on us to look at the outcomes, not just in our sort of traditional lens of, are they becoming community leaders or are they becoming our donors? Because if we define the challenge as, are they getting engaged in Jewish life, then we have to be prepared to actually measure outcomes against getting engaged in Jewish life and recognize that's a success. And then I think there are other things Federations need to do, have to do, want to do, to find the people within that pool who are going to become their leaders and their donors. So I think we have to not mush those things together and assume that when we're dealing with engagement strategies, that everything sort of goes all the way down the chain to, our National Young Leadership Cabinet. It's not a straight line projection.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be nice, and for some it will be, but it's not the whole game.
Hi. I'm Brooke Shostak. I'm the Director of Development for Drexel Hillel, and I just have a statement and a question. Actually, at Drexel Hillel this summer, we did sort of a mapping. We're not one of your partners. Maybe one day we will be, but
Please. We
spent a lot of time, year three, we spent a lot of time looking at what our impacts of our student engagement were, and some things fall in, high impact, but sort of low you know, you have a small number of students who go on an alternative spring break trip, right. And then you might have a greater number of students. You have 100 students coming to Shabbat dinner every week. And I guess my sort of sense is that, you know, we weren't putting grades on it. We were just kind of trying to see, because, you know, a Hillel is going to have both, right? You're going to send maybe, you know, a bus full of students on Birthright, but you might be having students coming, you know, the same students or different students coming for Shabbat dinner, and there's not a lot of content there, but that's their interaction with Hillel. So I'm just curious, you know, you're kind of saying six touches, and obviously we know that that may not be realistic for a majority of students to be that involved, but you know, we kind of looked at it like we need, you know, the Purim party might get 200 people, and we know that's not very deep and enriching as, you know, learning that might get 10 students. So I guess from your, my question is, like, are you grading, quote unquote, the where those things fall, or are you sort of recognizing that in any Hillel program, you're going to, you need to have all of that going on? And my, I'm sorry, and I'll just say my second piece. I know in Philadelphia, we all have Federation allocations. We, every campus gets funds from Federation. And there's lots of data that's needed, and I feel that a lot of times the allocation results are how many students are you reaching, how many programs are you having, and a lot of times everyone, you know, makes those numbers look as pretty as possible when they actually might not be as accurate or as real. And so for any campus that's getting Federation funding, I guess I would just put it out there that is it quality or quantity? You know, and sometimes people feel, well, we got to get the, you know, the quantity in to make it look good, when in reality, maybe that's not the best way. So I would just kind of put that out there as food for thought. So
I think you're asking some complicated questions. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, I'll chime in.
So, I look like you did. So.
Yeah. So look, I think one of the reasons we were so eager to actually put this program on the agenda today, it's just a great way for our system to learn about how do you measure impact, how do you measure Jewish experience. Hillel's taken a shot at sort of attaching what kind of outcomes are we prepared to commit to and measure against. So I think in and of itself, that's great for our system to learn about and relevant for many of our agencies. But I think it goes beyond that, because there's an inherent importance to actually focusing on the campus environment, right? So a huge percentage of our students go to college, go to university campus. That's sort of a very mainstream experience for North American Jewish students. 80% of them are on 200 campuses. We know which 200 campuses they're on. So that means if you sort of think very broadly, very strategically as a North American community, if we can get it right, however we're defining getting it right, excellence, on those 200 campuses, and we might want to stretch beyond that to some smaller campuses that have elite students involved. But if we can get it right on those campuses, that in a very concentrated way for a very narrow period of time in the trajectory of young people's lives, we have a shot at changing the Jewish trajectory of their lives. So I think that is sort of an enormous case for alignment between the Hillel system and the Federation system to sort of look at this together. So to sort of come back to your question, so how does a Federation look at this? How does a Federation measure and tie that to allocations? I think that's a great strategic question for the Hillels and the Federations to look at together. I would say the first step is, are the Hillels in this process? Is the Federation supporting its Hillels into this process? Can the Federation rely on this measurement process to be the questions that they're asking of their Hillels so that they're actually pushing in the same direction as Hillel and not sort of two competitive measurement systems or different value systems at play? Because if the Hillel leadership is actually asking these questions of themselves, they're going to be pushing in the direction of improvement. And that's what Federation allocation committees want in the end of the day.
Right. I might add a couple of things to that. First, to your first question, I'm just excited when I see my clients and organizations asking the questions about do these numbers tell me that my strategy is working or that I should adjust something? So, regardless of what we classify as deep or good or broad or whatever, just sort of having the data to enrich that discussion with your boards or with your program teams, I think is awesome. And I like to see that happening. The other thing I would say is from a broader context, from the United Ways that we work with, from the federations that we work with, the foundations we work with, everybody's still trying to learn what this measurement game really means. And some people talk about measuring outcomes, but they're not really measuring outcomes. Some people get confused between outputs and outcomes. Some people get confused with tracking participation. So I think the field in general is just doing a lot of learning right now around figuring out what matters. And I think it's going to take time for an approach to settle. So the degree to which, as Mark was describing, that Hillel's federations, we do work with JCCs, so JCCs as well, all of the different players in the community puzzle putting together sort of a shared idea of what outcomes were, I think this will progressively get easier.
Thank you.
So I think that the last piece of it actually comes to ultimately the real resource question, right? So how does it that Hillel and Federation work together to not have it be the either or choice, right? Because if it's either or, we either go broad or we go deep, we don't actually get to the excellence level that we're trying to get to. So that we know that's going to take more resources. How do we get there? Yes.
So that kind of just touches on one of the things I was going to say. My name's David Manchester. I'm a PhD student at Brandeis, where I focus on the utilization of data in the American Jewish community.
Cool.
right on.
I'm also here with a different hat on in that I am the former vice president, current treasurer of the board of directors of American University Hillel, and serve as our personnel and student life chair. So as a data person, that scatterplot spoke to me. And so going to what you
Thank
just
you,
said.
You're a He's rare playing. Individual.
Yes. No, but going to what you were just talking about, the Hillels that looked like they were getting the most depth were engaging, I'll say, not 10 to 25% of the campus, just Jewish community. Those that were getting breadth were creating high impact experiences for 40% or less of the individuals. So recognizing that there are limited costs, we would love to be able to increase it. To get all of those to high depth, we're looking at least quadrupling plus the revenue of each individual Hillel. So if you had to today say that we're going to have the same fundraising outcomes as we had last year, did you include in the models what quadrant they're in to understand which is going to produce the best outcomes for the Jewish community, breadth versus depth?
So let me frame this a different way, because I think what this really gets at is how does this connect, how does the measurement piece connect to the overall drive to excellence, right?
So right, one of the critical questions we hope to be able to answer, and it's just too early, is the question of, like, what's the range of investment dollars per student, right? What's the right budget size for a Hillel that's going to enable them to get to excellence? And right, if we could find an excellent Hillel that's reaching all the benchmarks and spending very little, we want to know what they're doing. Most of the Hillels, quite frankly, are just under-resourced to reach the number of students that we're talking about on campus. And that, I mean, that's just a plain fact of life. And so we're trying to really, you know, at the same time that we're doing this data work that helps us think about how do we support Hillels to improve, part of our ability to support Hillels improve is to help them raise more money. And that's just, you know, a plain, you know, one part of this. So we can certainly talk more later.
Hi, I'm Danny Lehman from Hebrew College in Boston. Hi, Jen.
Hello, Danny.
I'm curious. I was most interested in the list of outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what you're doing to actually measure not just the amount of programs and whether they're hyping, but actually, do students change regarding those outcomes, which would, it seems to me, require a baseline study and then a repeated study over the course of several years.
Sure.
And if we're not doing that, then I'm concerned that that list is really not going to correlate strongly to the other things that you're trying to measure, which are, you know, the amount of times and the depth of the impact, because ultimately that's really what we're interested in. And even suggesting what percentage of students have a change, positive change in the various elements of that list as a real goal.
A goal for themselves.
A goal for the Hillels to say, you know, I'm interested in having 20% more students develop a stronger relationship to Israel. I'm going to measure that.
Right. So I alluded to this earlier on. We did a factor analysis where we're able to kind of group the in each of the outcome areas. I'm not a researcher on this, and so I'm the terminology. A regression analysis where they held constant students' background, students' other kind of prior experiences, gender. What are the other things that factored, and you could calculate kind of a Hillel effect by itself. So a Hillel could decide our effect level isn't strong enough in this area and we need to grow it. That's kind of one portion. But the other question you're asking, Danny, is kind of what's the delta over time? There was kind of like a, I don't know what you, like a
I don't know, the surveys were all confidential, but there was like a secret code on the survey so that when we do it, the surveying again on those 18 campuses this year, if there are students who took the survey last year and students who take the survey this year, we can begin. I don't know what our sample size is going to look like in that yet, but we're kind of reserving the opportunity to be able to look at the delta over time just kind of as one other facet of our research. So
we're also trying to indicate what kind of success, what kind of percentage of success is for those outcomes. Because you're judging high impact, but
yeah.
The question is, do you want to see a certain percentage make a positive change in a particular set of areas?
It's complicated.
They could bring a lot of slides. So what are the kinds of things that you look at that define these, right? So each of these is actually an abstract concept,
right?
That ultimately you have to translate into very concrete things to measure.
Right.
So maybe you can take us through a few examples of that.
I mean, part of it is that I think what's challenging is that
so let's build a relationship with Israel, Jewish homeland, right? Not simple, right?
No, not simple.
Not in these days.
Right. No, so we haven't said, and I guess we could do this with a greater sample of students. We did it on the campus level. We didn't have, but if you could say, well, the Hillel is running, putting X number of students on Birthright and has these programs and the Israel Fellows leading all kinds of activities, and you could see what the kind of Hillel effect size is on the Israel outcomes, right? So if we know, and students, when we kind of did it, when we did the study, we asked students, what do you participate in, right? And what I would say is on the individual campus level sample size, the sample was too small to make judgments about that. On the aggregate, we could say something, but that doesn't help an individual Hillel yet to get there. But over time, I think we will be able to, for Hillel, if they're increasing the rate of their participation, be able to say something about their programs overall. We were more able to say overall, your effect size on Israel, on growth in the Israel arena, you know, was 10%, right? An effect size, you know. But
what you asked was, did you participate in something, or you asked values and attitudes?
Both.
About
we asked both. We asked both. So, but I don't. We because our sample size wasn't enormous for each Hillel, we just can't make that kind of connection yet.
Got it. Okay. Repeat customer. Go ahead.
I'm back. We've been talking a lot about the surveying, like the Jewish students and things like that that are on campuses, but my next question is, are we looking at non-Jewish students that Hillels engage and how that affects Jewish life on college campuses, as well as engagement that Hillel can actually do? Because I know a lot of our non-Jewish students and non-Jewish partners as well really help with that. And if we're not looking at it now, is it something that we're going to be doing in the future?
It's a great question. It's something actually, as we were thinking about in growing our own kind of sample size and participation of a more diverse group of students was a question of, is there value in distributing a survey more widely with students who, are we interested in learning more about non-Jews and what they think about Hillel? Our colleagues at Berkeley Hillel have been leading the curve, and they did that this year and got some interesting data from non-Jews about Hillel.
What a shock that that was Berkeley.
But it also may increase our kind of the diversity of our sample size. So it's something we're considering doing. Part of this is simply it's not cheap to run these surveys, and we incentivize every student to take a survey. So we want to get as broad a sample size as we can, and we also need to make the investment to get that type of sample size and to do that type of analysis. So we're making choices and trade-offs all the time.
Hi, I'm Marissa Obachowski. I work at Hopkins Hillel. And I just wanted to know if you could speak about kind of a traditional college career lasts for 4 years. This data, it's very number driven, and I understand how percentages could relate and be relevant every single year. Mm-hmm. But are you looking at seniors versus freshmen and what they're involved with? You know, considering, is it 6 events or programs that they're attending 1 year? Of their college career, or is it 6 events and programs over the course of 4, which really is 1.5 programs per year? And it's very different.
It's per year. It's per year. So,
But I guess one thing I learned this year as a parent, not necessarily as a communal worker, is about 50% of students who complete an undergraduate degree complete it in 4 years. So the image we have in our heads of the traditional trajectory of college students, they go to school, they finish in 4 years, it's actually it's not as typical as we assume it is. Students are on all kinds of journeys, and the pathway to completing a degree isn't necessarily the four-year trajectory that we have in our heads.
Yeah, very true.
I think we've exhausted the questions of the audience, so we have some questions for you. So just first of all, show of hands, how many students do we have in the room? Okay. So I asked Brian and Jen if I could ask this question. I made them very nervous, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So can we put the student outcome slide back up? We'd love to hear from some, or I'd love to hear from some students about how you look at those outcomes, and do you think we're asking, is Hillel asking about the right things? So come up to the mic, share your thoughts. Or not. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Tamara, and I'm a student at the University of Central Florida. And I like all of these outcomes, but the one thing that isn't asked, and I'm freshman engagement coordinator at my school, is do you feel safe in the Jewish community at your school? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge part. I want to build the Jewish community at my school, and having a Jewish social network is one thing, but feeling comfortable in that network is another.
Thank you, really helpful.
Really, I think a great question, and I think something that reflects like how rapidly even our world is shifting around us, because I think when Hillel started this work, not so long ago, it wouldn't have even been on the radar screen as a concern in the way that it is,
right,
you know,
today.
It is today. Any other comments from students? So
one in the back. There we go.
Oh yeah, good. Don't knock over the camera.
Hello, my name is Jared Duchin. I go to American University, studying math and economics. So I love the regression analysis. One of the things that I was thinking about that is especially prevalent at our Hillel is a lot of our student groups are student-led and student-generated. So for example, our LGBTQ discussion group, I know student-generated. I know our Beit Midrash program was started a few years ago by a student. And I know for a lot of students, Hillel is a place that they can, you know, like, it's a medium for them to, you know, do their innovations, you know? Like, for them to start things, they go to Hillel and start it through Hillel. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's necessarily somehow there through Hillel, but like as a space to access their dreams.
Great, thank you.
I don't know.
That's
don't know
awesome. I like that.
Hi. Hi, my name is Stacy. I'm here at the University of Delaware Hillel. I just wanted to, so I was looking at it, and it says, see themselves as part of a global Jewish people. I know a lot of us, when we associate global, we think Israel directly. And while that is above, on like the bullet point above, I'm not sure, I was just like wondering what the goal of global is, because I, like, what are we being proactive about being global? Like, I think we're good united as like a nation, but what aspects of global are you looking at?
You know, I think, look, there's Jews all across the world, and Hillel is on, you know, and I'm gonna flub this one, Sydney, how many countries? 18 countries across the world. And, you know, there's an opportunity to really connect with students and the Jewish people throughout the world, and to what extent do we have a sense of responsibility, of connection, of caring, and I guess the other thing I would say is, in a world where kind of everything is flat and we're connected virtually in so many ways, how does the Jewish community, or you know, the communities of Jews across the world, connect with one another and share their lives? And you know, I think there's some Hillels that do that specifically in their programs, and there's others for whom that's less of a focus. But for right. Hillel, I mean, we're a global organization.
Right, and I think looking at that through a Jewish Federation lens, mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense, because really one of the great challenges of our time is having people within our communities feel themselves as part of a global Jewish people, and instilling that sense of peoplehood that exactly, you know, sort of ignites or incites those sense of mutual bonds of responsibility and caring that is actually the root of our whole philanthropic system. So, you know, we're thrilled to actually see that mm-hmm. as a value expressed in Hillel's measurement system. Yes?
Hi, I'm Emily from Hillel at Temple. Hey.
You've been having too much fun.
Just lift the mic up a little bit.
I lost my voice at a dance marathon. Sorry. I was raising money for kids.
Great.
anyway, so I think something missing from this is leadership roles. Students that are engaged by Hillel and taking on leadership roles, whether that's with a title or not. And I think also, like, personally for us, when we started having a student board at Temple, we struggled having people running for the positions. And I think a big goal now is increasing and getting more people running so there's actually people that want to have leadership roles, people that are encouraged to continue on with those leadership roles on campus, in Hillel, outside of Hillel, and then after college.
Sure. We ask a lot about leadership in our survey. We didn't put that as an outcome specifically. It could be a byproduct. One of the questions of, on the one hand, we are, and actually there's been studies that have shown that involvement in Hillel and college is a key common denominator in leadership roles in the Jewish community writ large in the future. So that's been are you raising your hand?
Yes.
Thank you, Mark. Right, has been a part of the story, and that is certainly part of kind of our output measures, and we ask a lot about people's involvement in those things. I think there was a debate about if we're going to be broad, right, and seek outcomes for everybody, our goal of outcome, everyone ought not be a leader. And so the outcomes were intending to be broad with a hope.
Go to the next slide in the deck. So if you look on the right column, as part of the 20% high impact experiences, they do define in their measurement system being involved in leadership on the campus in Hillel or other Jewish student organizations as a high impact experience.
And so we know that those are some of the things that create those high levels of outcomes. I think, there's this tension. If we're a leadership organization, we should be that, and we should be for everybody. And there's tension. But thank you. It's important.
So we'll take this as the last comment on this, and then I have another question for the group.
Cool. Okay. Hi. I'm Alex. I'm from the University of Delaware as well. And I wanted to kind of combine, go off of the questions that we've heard before. We asked about the being safe on campus, and we asked about leadership roles. I wanted to just, if you want to go back to what the question I'm referring to. Yeah, thank
sure.
you. So not only being a leader within who we are as students and to pursue leadership after our time at Hillel, but to also be a leader within Hillel, both in the experience that have a voice within what the experiences of Hillel for students in general. I feel like that's what I get out of Hillel a little bit, and what I think Hillel can is a large part of it is that the students' voices do matter with what the experiences is.
Mm-hmm. Great. I wonder if there's actually, Brian was explaining Net Promoter Score for professionals, but Net Promoter Score was part of the score. And I wonder if we, as we continue to study that, the correlation between those scores and the sense to which students feel like their voice is part of Hillel will be a factor.
Okay. Go ahead.
Please.
So I want to turn a question over to folks who are involved from a Federation leadership perspective, either Federation staff, Federation volunteer leadership. And my question for you is, are you seeing donors in your community asking for these kinds of metrics, and how are you beginning to respond to them? Sorry?
Yes, and we are, Greater Metro West in New Jersey. We are just beginning to respond to them, which is why I'm here at the GA learning all about how everybody else is doing it, because we've realized in our community that if we don't begin measuring impact, we're not going to be able to raise the dollars moving forward, because that is exactly what our donors want to see.
Any other comments on that front?
I'm not a Federation.
That's okay.
Either way, but I can speak sort of on behalf of our Federation. I'm Donna, I'm the Executive Director at the University of Delaware.
Hello.
Thank you, my fan club. I'm very lucky. I've been in this position, I like to say, 4 semesters, but our federation leadership was very much interested in what was going on at our Hillel and realized that we needed the resources that we were not getting just from our allocation and from our local donors. So they stepped up to be part of a comprehensive excellence plan. And so we're lucky to not only be part of this second year of measurement, but we're also digging a little bit deeper and raising more money to be able to to be able to make sure that the outcomes that we're measuring can really happen. So we've been able to put on more staff onto our team and really look at how we're doing things. So our federation is extremely interested in what we're doing, and we regularly give them reports not only to the donors that have been part of this pilot, but also to the federation.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
So at this point, I want to thank Jen and Brian for joining me and all of us today and sharing this with us. Thank all of you for session with a lot of great questions, a lot of great comments, and enjoy the rest of the GA. Next up is the afternoon plenary. Look forward to seeing you there.